AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's Brett Johnson and it's Hunter Haas. We have gone deep to the bench today, very deep. We're not supposed to be here. We're subs for the subs.
Yeah, that's
we're third
true.
Stringers today. Matt McNeil, of course, out on vacation, a well-deserved vacation. Then Alan Miller was supposed to do today, but he actually is trying to get the 20th anniversary of his TV show Access to Democracy put together. So he is super busy with that. By the way, make sure you watch Access to Democracy over on Egan Television. So he couldn't make it in today, so you're stuck with Hunter and Brett, not just for the Matt McNeil show, but then our usual show at 4 o'clock. A double fix of Hunter and Brett today as we are the third stringers here on AM 950. How do you like that, Hunter?
Well, we better call in a guest.
I know. We better bring in an A-lister guest if we're going to be the third stringers here filling in for Matt McNeil.
Like Tom Brady-esque quality.
I had another Tom in mind. How about Tom Hartman? He's a good first stringer to bring in. It actually is my pleasure to welcome in Tom Hartman to AM 950. He just wrote a new book, The Hidden History of Guns and the Second Amendment, and he's going to be in town here at Next Chapter Booksellers coming up on Saturday at 7 p.m. talking about that book, that place also formerly known as Common Good Books, in case you're not quite familiar with it. Tom Hartman, our pleasure to welcome you here to the AM 950 airwaves.
Hey, Hunter and Brett, it's great to be with you.
I know, we got to get...
The Twin Cities are treating you well?
I hope so as well. We were talking about, we got to bring in an A-lister when Hunter and I are the third stringers here filling in for Matt McNeil, so why not go with Tom Hartman?
No, you guys are great. I'm honored and pleased to be on your show.
Excellent.
Thanks so much.
So you just wrote a new book, Tom, The Hidden History of Guns and the Second Amendment, and what I love that you wrote about in this book is that you took the Second Amendment on from a more historical perspective, because so often when we hear the debate, it kind of devolves into freedom versus safety for citizens, when if you actually look at the historical context of the Second Amendment, it's kind of a dark history, as you talk about in the book, where it talks about slave patrols, among other things.
Yeah, the Second Amendment came out of two things. When the framers were putting together the Constitution, they were very, very worried that America, this new country they were creating, might go the way of so many European democracies, which is that the army would basically stage a military coup and take over the government. They wanted to prevent that. And so there was a virtual unanimous agreement among the people in Philadelphia in that summer of 1787 that there should not be a standing army during time of peace. And in fact, they wrote it right into Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution that the only limit on taxing and spending, literally, in the entire Constitution, is to fund the army. The army may only be funded for 2 years, which is why the Military Appropriations Bill is such a freakout, because if it doesn't get funded, the army ceases to exist. And that was their idea. They actually wanted the army to cease to exist when we weren't at war, and what would replace it would be state militias. And so then part two of that was, well, how do you have state militias? And that was the Second Amendment, was to empower the state militias. But the problem was that in the North, the state militias were like, you know, the Massachusetts militia protecting the state, you know, and they were sort of like the National Guard. They get together once a month and drill. But in the South, the militias were both the state militias and the police forces. They policed most of the southern states, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Virginia, and the slave patrols. And, I mean, you can't have slavery without a police state, literally a police state. People don't want to be enslaved. And so the slave patrols were also the militia. That's why Patrick Henry at the Virginia Ratifying Convention in 1789 got up and gave this impassioned speech about how the original version of the Second Amendment that said for the security of a free country, you know, we should have these state militias, or we should have, you know, militias. He said, you've got to change that word from country to state, which is what it says now, because he was concerned that if there was a crisis on the Canadian border and the Virginia militia got called up, their slave patrol would leave the state and the slaves would rise up and slaughter everybody. And, I mean, you know, he was...
There we go. Got you back, Tom. I know you're driving to the airport right now, so the phone might be cutting out a little bit, but I think we got you back now.
Yeah. And thus the Second Amendment came about, you know, because of Patrick Henry's objections. He was the largest slaveholder in Virginia. Ironically, the guy who said, give me liberty or give me death. And he was the one who made them change the Second Amendment into a form that both you know, enabled the state militias and, you know, allowed Virginia to maintain its slave patrol.
So what overall, Tom, inspired you to write this book?
Well, you know, I had personal experience with this. I tell the story in the book, you know, one of my best friend in high school committed suicide with a gun. So, you know, I'd been thinking for a lot of years about writing a book about guns and the history of the Second Amendment. And also, you know, we have a public health crisis in this country. 40,000 people died from guns last year. And, you know, hundreds of thousands, over 100,000 were wounded. If you, you know, I'm going to the airport. At the airport, they're going to board the military first. We do that because they walk into gunfire, right? That's what they volunteer for. But, and same thing with cops. When a police officer is killed, the funeral typically shuts down a city. But if you add up all the military who are killed in the line of duty and all the police officers who are killed in the line of duty, any individual year between the end of the Vietnam War and today, the total number of children who are killed with guns in the United States exceeds the sum of our military and our police who are killed with guns. And yet nobody at the airport is saying, well, children under 18 can board first. You know, thank you for laying your life down to protect the profits of the gun industry. So, you know, that's what's going on. And I thought it was a pretty big deal to talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to go back to the language of the Second Amendment that we were just talking about a second ago. Why didn't the founders necessarily write the amendment more clearly, or at the time, did they think it was clear and they really could not have foreseen what we have today with assault rifles and guns being readily available and these guns everywhere bills?
I think what they didn't foresee was the rise of a weapons industry. I mean, this is kind of a variation of what Dwight Eisenhower warned us about in his farewell address, you know? And obviously there were blunderbusses and things back then. They weren't, you know, when they were debating the Second Amendment, there was actually virtually no discussion about, you know, self-defense and that kind of thing. I mean, there were founders who said things about that, but it wasn't part of the debate. And I think they'd be horrified if they could see what's going on today. It's completely ahistoric, the arguments that are being made.
Well, it's interesting about our country, just, you know, not only as a first world country, but also a Western country, a so-called Western country, is that we seem to be the only nation in the world that's really caught up in this type of gun craze. Why didn't this really happen in countries like Canada or countries in Europe? Why didn't they go through this same sort of thing where they have guns everywhere? Why are we different than them?
There was pretty aggressive gun control in the United States after the Civil War. You know, if you went to Tombstone or, you know, any of the old Wild West cities, there was always a sign outside town that said, check your guns at the sheriff's office, because people knew the kind of damage guns could do as a result of the Civil War. I think the same is true of Europe. I think the European countries, you know, they've had two world wars, you know, in the last 100 years. And I think that they just, you know, didn't want, they know the kind of damage guns can do. And I don't think that Americans, I mean, it's been so long since the Civil War, we just don't remember it, frankly.
We've got Tom Hartman on the phone lines with us. He just wrote the book, The Hidden History of Guns and the Second Amendment, and he'll be here in the Twin Cities coming up on Saturday at 7 o'clock at Next Chapter Books in St. Paul, formerly known as Common Good Books. Find more details over at nextchapterbooksellers.com or am950radio.com. Love to have you over at that event. So I want to talk about the NRA now, Tom, because you kind of alluded to this, but the NRA wasn't always this gun-crazy organization. Going back to its original roots, it was more about gun safety, correct?
Yeah, and I remember the NRA from the 60s when I was a Boy Scout. I mean, you know, they taught, you know, safe shooting and responsible gun ownership and stuff like that. United, by the way. And they kind of got taken over by the big gun manufacturers in the 70s and, you know, led us to where we're at now. And also, you know, prior to the 70s, the Second Amendment was just almost never discussed, you know, just like the Third Amendment. It was just this kind of vestigial thing, this leftover thing from the founding era. And they kind of reinvented the whole thing, you know. So it's problematic on the one hand. On the other hand, it sure looks like the NRA is about to go the way that the tobacco lobby did in the late 90s, when everybody figured out that the tobacco guys had been lying to us for their own profit for years and years and years. I think that same thing is starting to happen with the gun industry and the NRA.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that because as the NRA does become less and less popular, I'm wondering about their influence on the GOP because in the past, even going back to a decade or two ago, it seemed like their influence not was necessarily from putting money directly into the coffers of the candidates they're supported, but being threatened with a primary if you're a Republican. And now that they've become less popular, what do you think the future of the NRA is and Republicans and their fascination with gun support? Do you think that could wane in future years now that they might not have that threat of a primary that could be having a candidate supported by the NRA? What do you think about that?
Well, the NRA has very successfully marketed themselves and guns and turned it from, just a, an instrument of self-defense or of murder or whatever, however you want to characterize it, into a cultural icon. I am who I am because of my gun. And that's going to take probably a generation to wash out of our culture. So I'm guessing the Republicans will continue to, push that shtick for a while, with or without the NRA. But I think, now that, the Russian money laundering with the NRA and all this other stuff, I think it's starting to become very problematic for them. So.
And in the book, you talk about some solutions to moving forward in the gun debate, correct?
Yeah, I think that we should treat guns like cars. Mm-hmm. You have to register them. You have to have liability insurance. You have to have a license and, prove that you know how to use them and all that kind of stuff. It's pretty straightforward stuff. Thank you, Albert. Yep. And, I don't think this is rocket science. I mean, we did this with cars. In the 1920s, you could buy a car and drive it around and, with no driver's license, no insurance, no registration, no controls, no regulation, no nothing. And the result of that was that a lot of people died because, in car accidents. And so, we came up with this three-part system. And the third part, the liability insurance, should particularly interest Republicans because we don't want the government, snooping on us. We don't want the government looking, delving into our lives to predict whether or not we're going to be dangerous with a gun. That's not that's not an appropriate function of government. So, but it is the function of an entire industry, the insurance industry. If you want to buy life insurance, they're gonna ask you, do you smoke? They're gonna look into your health. They're gonna look into your history. You want to buy health insurance? Same thing. Want to buy car insurance? Do you have a DUI? So, if we require gun owners to have liability insurance, you have an industry that would be, looking into their history and their behavior and determining whether or not they're a danger, and that's. That's a reasonable thing, I think. And, it's a free market solution, like the Republicans like to say.
Tom,
sorry about the noise here. I just got dropped off at the airport.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, well, we'll just touch one more topic/question for you. And this is separate from the gun issue, but something Hunter and I have wanted to ask you about. And this has to do with the future of the progressive media landscape, because we were just talking off air, and we're going to talk about this during our next segment, how there's this radio station in Pennsylvania that's switching to an all podcast format. And I think, Hunter, you wanted to expand on that, right?
Well, yeah. And I was just curious, because you've been there. Saw this whole progressive radio format through and through. And what do you see as the future of just progressive media?
I think progressive media is growing. And, it's the media landscape. Ben Bagdikian documented this in his book, The Media Monopoly, so well, throughout the 80s and 90s, when Reagan essentially reinvented our, and the Supreme Court, too, reinvented our antitrust laws, we saw more and more media being bought up by fewer and fewer companies. And the space for a progressive message, which is not a message that, the billionaires who own most of our media are fond of, the space for a progressive message got smaller and smaller and smaller. And with podcasts, that space has, again, expanded. Our, the podcast that we do from our show has just exploded in areas where we're not on the air. People are like, oh, wow, hey, a progressive show. And so I think it's a good thing. Hopefully the big telecom companies, now that they've destroyed net neutrality, won't figure out a way to mess with us, with progressive podcasts.
Yeah, absolutely. It's certainly moving in an interesting direction, especially here on the progressive side, as we've had some changes in our lineup with some of our national shows. But yeah, it is interesting as we pull in more podcasts to our lineup to see how the landscape changes. Tom, I know you got to get running here in a second, being at the airport, but looking forward to having you here in the Twin Cities coming up on Saturday. Next chapter, booksellers talking about your new book, The Hidden History of Guns and the Second Amendment. Any final thoughts, any final takeaways you want people to have after they read your book?
Well, you know, yeah, we need to do something. We have a crisis. We have 4% of the world's population, and we have 50% of the world's guns in civilian hands. And, you know, that is not a healthy thing. It's killing our children. It's killing us. And I'm not calling for a gun ban at all. Mm-hmm. I'm calling for responsible gun ownership. And there's several ways to do that are laid out in the book. The one that we just talked about is one of my favorites. And other countries have figured this out. I mean, we've got a higher gun death rate than any other developed country in the world. And frankly, much, much higher than most undeveloped countries. And so, you know, it's like, we can figure this out. We're America, right?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, Tom, wish you luck to wherever you're going. Hopefully your flight's not getting delayed or anything like that. And we look forward to seeing you coming up on Saturday and Next Chapter Books.
Thanks a lot, guys. You do a great show. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Thanks, Tom. Our pleasure having him on. You're listening to, the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. I almost said, Hunter, the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. I'm so used to saying that. But we're filling in for Matt today as we're on the third string here, as Alan Miller couldn't be here. Matt couldn't be here. So going down, we're the Brooks Bollinger. We're the, who else has been a Vikings third string quarterback? Spurgeon Wynn.
Yeah. Christian Ponder.
Now you just left me off on a bad note. All right. Well, on that note, we will take a break and be back talking more on The Matt McNeil Show with Brett and Hunter filling in. Spinning around you. Now I tell the-